Welcome back, everybody, to the ABZ show, where today we have a special guest. I met my guest while he was pitching his business in a startup competition that we ran. And guess what? He won that competition and entered our program. Everyone, please help me welcome Teo. Hey, Teo, how are you?
Doing well, Abe. Great to be here.
Well, thank you for doing this. And I know we're going to be talking deeper about you and your story. So please tell me more about what you do.
Sure. I run a consumer analytics company called Basal Labs. We're focused on where people go and what they value. So generally, we're selling to cities. We're trying to, with COVID, hopefully on, ending soon, go back into markets that were really hit hard by COVID, tourism, hospitality. I mean, you name it, literally any industry that was really massively hit by COVID really needs to understand consumer experience. Great fit for our market. But so yeah, 2021 will be a good year.
Nice. And the company name, you never mentioned the company name.
Oh, Basal Labs. We're green and friendly.
Yeah. Nice. I remember when you even came up with that name. I was there actually in that same room. So it was a super cool, I guess it was a super process to get there. But so tell me before that, what did you do? You know, where did you grow up? Where are you right now, actually?
Sure. I'm somewhere where there's construction, so hopefully no one's suffering that on the headphones. So I grew up around Boston and grew up in a family of like artists and a carpenter and sort of like blue collar. So I didn't think I was going to do entrepreneurship. I was really interested in listening to communities, understanding how people talk about themselves, how they map themselves through space. And so I was working for Atlantic Media, doing data journalism after college. It was a good fit, but I felt like, you know, there's more to tell, more to do, a lot more to do with the data. And so that started a side project. I ended up starting my first venture called City 78. I was very focused on urban planning and still running, doing great work around the pandemic and everything that's happening with urban planning and space. And then I ended up starting Basal Labs, which is focused more on general AI applications, specifically natural language processing, computer vision for marketing and for cities to tell a better story of why should people come here? Why should businesses move here? What are our metrics? What do we need to improve on? Yeah, so that's how I got here.
Wow. So, and just tell me more about, you know, because, you know, moving from journalism, and honestly, like, I've been in the startup world and in the business world for so long, right? So, and I don't see a lot of people moving from that whole journalism space into entrepreneurship. What was that? Do you remember what was the moment when you said, you know what, let me open my own company? Like, I want to hear more how that story happened.
I think it was the moment I realized I could get paid more, but no, it's journalism is it's budgets there. Yeah. So I was doing a lot of things around political related, you know, data, understanding different issues day to day, and what's happening and why should Congress care. That translated for me, again, with communities into I need to build data tools to get data that no one else has. So it turned into creating Twitter scrapers to take in, you know, every single thing that congressional members have ever put out on their personal or professional channels, and then classifying that and understanding what makes them tick, what are the issues they care about, and then how do we turn that into something that's valuable for the readership. I ended up doing a lot more project management related work of sort of a intermediary between coders and the storytellers, the writers, for doing work with CityLab, and again, getting paid more than, you know, just bare bones journalism. And so that sort of that transitioned me into I actually have value in not just as someone to create content or do like data wonky things, but actually to lead projects. And always have side projects. And so one of those side projects came through.
Nice. And I like, you know, I love to hear stories about, you know, these side hustles and side projects that actually convert into full-time jobs or full-time businesses. You know, I mean, every entrepreneur, I would say, has a couple of side hustles, because you know there's this magic around the word entrepreneurship, especially these days. But what people don't know is entrepreneurship is not you know, doesn't pay the bills, you know, especially if you do one thing. And I know a lot of times investors, they tell you you're not focused and you're not you know, you're not, you don't have 100% skin in the game. And but you know what, what I think entrepreneurs these days got a lot smarter by saying, not telling them about their side hustles. You know, that's what I used to do in that, but I,
yeah,
I'm dedicated for this. And because people don't understand, there's a lot of time that entrepreneurs usually are really good in time management, right? And they can do so much more, and yet, and they have to, because somebody has to pay the bills somehow, right? So that's what it is, and it's very interesting. So, okay, through that, like, did you meet any cool, interesting people? Did you say, these are the people I want to work with, or these are the people I do not want to work with? This is the set of data that I like. Walk me through that.
Yeah. So for starting my first venture, I was actually, it was with my roommate, and we had moved in together because we both write a lot of music. And so it was actually through a mutual appreciation for hip hop and electronic, and fusing that. We actually never really talked about business so much. It was, I don't know, a year or two into like getting knowing each other, that I was like, wait, you do this, I do that, we can actually do something together. But you know, before that, I always have projects. I've never really considered them entrepreneurial. I think it's with my dad always said, you know, don't start your own business, because it's just going to be a time suck and you won't have time for your personal life. So I never really thought of them as like, oh, I can make a business out of this. It was more of, here's a really interesting set of data, or here's a really interesting thing we can do with creating like a web app that connects people to do X, Y, and Z. But it was always like a side project in my mind, never as something to go full time. So I don't know. I think in terms of finding people around me, the most important thing is, I think, is really you have to be, it sounds corny, but passionate about what you want to do. So whether it's, for me, it's listening to communities is my goal. How I do that is collecting data, and I'm really good at building scalable data mining operations and natural language processing. And I mean, we rock with the NLP, right? I see what our competitors are doing, and it's we do a good job. That being said, the goal is to listen to communities, and I need to find people around me who have very specific missions and skill sets that they use to get to that goal. Someone with just the skill set, not a good fit, right? Someone with just the passion or the mission, without the skill set, also not a good fit, right? You got to have something to apply it to, and then if it meshes well, then it's a good partnership.
It's great what you just said, and I think that's something that, even, you know, you said that you're not that entrepreneurial, but you kind of summarized one of the key pillars of entrepreneurship, which is, you know, you're trying to find people with the same mindset, with the same impact kind of goals, you know what I mean? And that's usually the winning formula, you know. And I know from the days from your startup bootcamp days, where you know we usually never invest in sole founders, and we never, but I know you had your, you know, the team that you trusted, you know, that had exact the way thinking that you did, and that's good enough for investors, you know. And always, at least for my successful ventures, I always knew what every co-founder did, and we discussed about boundaries, but also we shared values, you know. If everybody's value was to be a unicorn and somebody was not, was more of a culturally driven or like something impact socially, that company never goes anywhere. You know, everybody needs to be aligned. The goals need to be aligned. So very interesting point and take on a co-founder issue. So tell me what is, like, you know, more stories about data, especially, you know, when you're listening to all these data and neighborhoods, and you're trying to compare restaurants, and you're trying to compare, you know, like, especially in COVID, what was the craziest story that you guys got?
I mean, just a quick one is just seeing how many businesses are closed temporarily or permanently. It's kind of like everyone sees it as a number, right? Like the government will produce a figure saying this many businesses are at risk or have closed, but mapping it is quite different. And so that was graphically, I mean, just to see it was or visually was quite a lot. I got a fun one, or not so fun, because I don't think Simon Properties will do so well with it, but malls that were putting out this big white paper, you know, PDF, people sign up, and it's around REITs, and it's around specifically REITs in America, these Simon, McCarrish, and Cedar Realty. And we're looking at which ones closed and which ones did well in the consumer's eyes. So currently, the way that people measure malls performance is you have, you know, leasing, you know, how much does it cost to get a space there? Mm-hmm. How big is the total mall, you know, in terms of like square feet? You have these metrics that are very traditional. It doesn't really match when the only thing drawing people into malls is experience, right? Like people can buy something on Amazon. And so before COVID, there's this big experiential push. You know, Simon was investing in food courts and different experiences, but, you know, all of these different things to draw people in to stay longer, spend more, bring their friends, family. And then COVID hit. But when COVID hit, people still didn't have metrics to actually track experiential things. So the fun finding is that, I'll give you two. The first one is that malls that made big bets in middle-income areas, huge malls, those are the ones that are closing right now. There's one in Atlanta that made some news. It was too big of a bet. People don't have, you know, tighter budgets. They aren't going out for those experiential things. Big bet on a huge mall. It wasn't a great investment. What does work, though, is outdoor investments. And so malls that made investments in, you know, parts of California, for example, that are very like outdoor and we saw during summer, like July or August, when we were collecting some of this data, that people loved it there. I mean, the foods, the food and beverage, you know, people's perceptions of spending time, atmosphere, they all went up. What didn't go up was cleanliness. People did not have issues with cleanliness because it's fundamentally an outdoor space. They feel like psychologically, they feel good about it. Contrastingly, indoor malls where the food court and everything is all inside, cleanliness mentions just shot way, way up. People don't necessarily talk about COVID specifically. They don't say like, this was a COVID unsafe place. They'll say it felt unclean. Like they have passing mentions for how they feel about, you know, cleanliness. And we know it's COVID related because it was static for years before that. When COVID hit, suddenly something shoots up. Yeah. But people who made investments in outdoor spaces really reaping the benefits there.
Well, that's super interesting, you know what I mean? So, and I know, listen, you know, during COVID, certain businesses, you know, had to either pivot or sadly close down. But I know some businesses did really well. Anything in the logistics, anything in e-commerce that, you know, whoever was not a believer in e-commerce now had to survive, right? So like groceries is an example, you know, I think even as me, as I'd like to say I'm an early adopter of a lot of technologies. I did use a couple of these grocery apps before COVID, but like whenever, you know, I don't want to carry anything heavy, you know, I'd get in water and you know, soft drinks and like whatever, like detergent, like whatever is the bulky items, I used to get them delivered, right? But now suddenly I had to buy vegetables and fruits, and that's not an experience that I have ever done before. And even for me as an early adopter, that had, like, I was super concerned in the beginning, and honestly, in my all fairness, the concern was right there, because I did get not the best quality of vegetables and fruits delivered, but again, because I'm not picking them myself, and having that kind of mentality, and I am an early adopter, you know, what happens to, you know, people who are not used to tech, or people who, you know, still pay by cash, and there was a tough time where people went through, you know what I mean? And this is something that is, we talk about tremendously on the show, that comfort zone. And obviously the narrative changed. And I think this is where a business like yours makes complete sense, because people were saying one thing and then now they're talking about, you know, their people's priorities changed. And I know you've been scraping data from everywhere and stuff like that. But are you doing anything outside of the US?
Yeah, we're actually putting together, for just fun, one of our researchers is going to Taiwan this summer. So just putting together a thing of looking at every single convenience store across Taiwan, because it's a very different experience with like the way they do convenience stores versus the way Americans do it. Like you wouldn't buy the food always necessarily in like a convenience store here, but I mean, there's just full on restaurants over there. That's a fun one. You know, we have two other things. One is we're speaking with a real estate advisory firm over in Singapore on evaluating urban areas of Southeast Asia, specifically for figuring out where to invest and where to put and locate different businesses based on consumer perceptions and based on consumer journeys, like what kinds of consumers are going here, here, and here, therefore we should place something there. Nice. And then we're also helping out with another, I think they're still under wraps, but in the food and beverage space in Dubai, and providing a whole lot of insight into how people value restaurants and bars and different places in Dubai and where else they're going. So just our bread and butter.
I think it's something now. You know, I think COVID definitely accelerated the whole concept of, you know, experience, because from my personal experience of especially the F&B and tourism, is that the mentality, build it and they'll come. But now it's more like, let's see what they're saying first before we build it, which is
right.
You totally double down on that. You know what a BHAG is, right?
No, I don't.
So BHAG is your 10 to 25 year goal. It actually stands for big, hairy, audacious goals or ambitious goals.
Mm.
So what is Theo's 10 to 25 BHAG? Could be Basil Labs related, could be your personal. Just tell me, I'm curious to find out.
I think that my personal and professional are pretty well aligned on this. It could be Basil or it could be another venture, but I want to create a future where people are using data in a way that's sustainable and ethical. Like during COVID, you're seeing a lot of companies like Safegraph, where they have 30 million American cell phones tracked, who have zero clue that they're being tracked, by the way, right? Maybe like a couple of them read an article on New York Times and they're like, man, those people are suckers, right? But it's you, right? It's a lot of the country. And, you know, if you look at their website and you look at their statement on privacy, they say like, we have no plans to move into Europe. And it's like, well, no way, it's GDPR, right? So some parts of the world are going in the right direction. And I'm not trying to be a highbrow, you know, think tank policy related person. I want to be very applied. Like there are a lot of lessons that startup founders and people in day to day, like need to talk about data ethics, but not in this way of like, let's go read a paper on it. It's like, I have a problem because I'm building an app right now and I need to balance, for example, Strava is a running community. I need to balance community building of people who want to share their roots with geo privacy, right? Like I don't want to reveal my home location. And that's a real problem. And as you reading a lot of papers is not going to help you there. I would like to help out in a very technical way, or sort of applied technical way, to simultaneously provide ways that, you know, this is how you can think about data. This is how you can conceptualize aggregating data, taking personal, you know, publicly posted but personal data, and this is how you can turn it into insights in a meaningful way that's still respecting user privacy. So that's definitely Basil Labs, right? And then at the same time, I also want to help in a general sense of like, this is a mindset that we should be approaching any kind of future ventures. And just help out in that space. And we can show by doing, right?
Yeah, and you know what? That's you know, definitely the impact there is, you know, because we are going into a crazy data era where, you know, I don't think any, like, people talk about digital footprint and people talk about, you know, I'm not on social media or I'm on whatever, and like, somebody really needs to address what you're saying, because, you know, it's people's livelihoods and it's people's, you know, how, you know, like the behavior. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, there has to be some kind of regulations coming up, because, you know, it's always that, I always say it's always that 1% that mm-hmm. ruins it for everybody. Right. So that's why, that's when, you know what I mean? And I'm not pro or against regulation, but I'm just saying there needs to be a framework where people need to abide to, because then, you know, when do we say no and where is the line, right? So,
Yeah.
So, okay, fantastic. But all right, so I'm going to ask you this curveball question that I ask every one of my...
I thought that was the curveball, yeah.
No, this one is more of a fun curveball. So Theo, if you have one superpower or one superhero's power you want to mimic, who would that be or what would that superpower be?
Man, do I know enough about comic book heroes to, I feel like I'm a novice in the eyes, you know, next to Abe. how about,
give me Lex Luthor is a
villain, right?
Sorry?
Lex Luthor, he's a villain, right? He's a bad guy.
So. And not always. He's like an anti, well, he is a villain, but he's also an anti-hero. So sometimes he does come back to save the life, but he's all about gathering data, though. So
I was thinking it's a good fit there, you know, like putting puzzle pieces together, create some value. But I mean, something fun. I mean, why not flying? You know, that's a cool one.
Yeah,
I guess that's like a dime a dozen for superheroes, but you know, get to go other places.
You're the first person to say something like flying. It's always been like traveling in time or reading minds or like, you know, I mean, everybody wants to understand what's out there and better understand humanity, I guess. But flying,
man, during COVID, yeah, just take a trip over somewhere. Yeah, sounds like a good time.
You know, definitely a way to escape the lockdown, right? So yeah. You know, you just fly over and just see what it is. So I love it. So would you like to put any closing remarks before we close this episode? About your experiences or what you want to do or something like that. I'd love to hear your final thoughts.
I mean, this is a great conversation. I mean, thanks again for having me. Final thoughts. I mean, off of that last, second to last question, you know, there's a lot of people who are, we always think about consumer or like data privacy from the user point of view, but you know, a lot of founders need to think about it too. And founders are people too. And I think that, you know, people who want to engage in more difficult discussions of like, we're collecting this data about our users, or we want to find these insights, but we want to do it in an ethical way. I mean, there should be more dialogue around that. You can reach out to me. I'm sure Abe also, you know, probably very interested in this too. But there needs to be more talk about how can we actually, you know, ask precise questions, build precise tech to get the right questions without having to just collect everything like that. That's not the right way to go, but you know, I don't think there's enough dialogue around what is the right way to go for people who have to do it every day.
Fantastic. And by the way, we do have a hashtag that I want everybody to follow, which is hashtag real talk, no nonsense. And you heard it from the man himself talking about founders being founders being human and all about data and ethics. That's fantastic. Thank you very much. And until next time, we'll talk to you soon, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.